Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning. It is the 6th of July, and the sun is rising, and the tomb is empty. And of course, we've been saying that each morning as a reminder that regardless of what we're up to in life and the circumstances of our lives, we serve a king of a living kingdom in Jesus, and his kingdom has no end. And so those troubling headlines and the difficult conversations and the stuff that can have us anxious and filled with worry, myself included, that we can point to this tomb as a place and say, hey, whatever's happening today, and we do have to walk it out, we know that there's always hope and there's always future in his beautiful kingdom. It is the one kingdom that has no end. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your interim host, Peter Kapsner, joined by the ever-capable Logan Rausch on the sound and board that keeps this show moving along, and Paul Perreault in the newsroom, who, along with Rachel Sutton, as we talk about each day, brings on these guests that can hopefully help these mornings feel like a bit of a Sabbath for all of us, because there is this restlessness. There's this set of waters in which we're swimming that I think can really make us feel anxious in country and the headlines and our phones screaming at us all day long. At least so much of that is my experience. So hopefully these 2 hours together on Faith Radio Mornings, we can take a pause and we can get into tricky conversations with a bit of sanity and complexity, as well as have a little bit of fun and humor. So Logan, good morning. Great to have you on the program again, as always.
I am so happy to be here. It is a good Friday. It is going to be sunny and cool. I'm so excited for today.
Well, we're going to talk with Adam Holtz here in just a minute, who reviews movies for Focus on the Family as well as Plugged In. And there was a headline that we referenced last hour that caught my attention. And there was a tractor in South Dakota that was picked up by a tornado, and kind of this Wizard of Oz movie moment was found then later in Montana. I don't know how far it is from South Dakota to Montana, but I got to believe that's a pretty long ways to send a tractor.
That brings a whole new definition to Dude, Where's My Car? But now it's the tractor, the farm edition of Dude, Where's My Car?
That is, yeah, apparently they found the bits and pieces. And so I think about this door. We're going to have to ask Adam this in just a minute. Mm-hmm. I mean, how historically realistic was it that this house was picked up? Is it possible, Logan, that there is somewhere over a rainbow that we can go and everything will be brightly colored and it would be this beautiful land with a golden road?
Personally, if I could find myself in the land of Oz, I might jump into a tornado. I don't know. I'd test it for everyone. Maybe film it, put it on YouTube, and we can all know for sure.
Well, I love it in the mornings because you're this music guy, and when you go to your Munchkin place and you start singing about the Lollipop Guild, it makes my spirit happy, Logan. It's 7 minutes past the hour. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be with Adam Holtz of Plugged In, Focus on the Family. We'll talk Ant-Man and Wasp, as well as the Kermit Gosnell story and anything that's going on in Hollywood. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute. And that, of course, is the music of Adam Holtz, who is, he works with Plugged In and does movie reviews for there, and as well as for Focus on the Family. And Adam, I don't know if you caught what we were just talking about, but in the last minute, not only is Logan singing songs from Munchkin Land, but apparently, Logan, you've been cast as Scarecrow several times in your life.
I have played the Scarecrow twice through my young adult career through the theater programs, yes.
Oh, and so Adam, I mean, are we concerned at this point about Logan? You know, would you have liked to have been the Lion or the Tin Man or the Scarecrow, Adam? What do you think would be best for you, for Logan? How are you sorting this out?
That's a tricky one. And my honest-to-goodness horrific confession is that the witch scared me so badly as a child that I don't think I have ever sat through Wizard of Oz end-to-end in one sitting. So, I'm sure I've seen all of it in chunks here and there, but I don't think I've ever watched it, which makes it difficult. I don't know, probably the Lion.
Yeah.
I have anxiety issues, so that's probably the best fit for me.
Yeah, but in fairness to you, man, that witch it was scary, and not only that, those flying monkeys are as disturbing as they get, right?
Very disturbing, and, you know, obviously this is a humorous sort of prelude to our main stuff that we're going to talk about today, but it's just a good reminder that, you know, stuff that as adults we wouldn't give a second thought, a little mind and a little heart sometimes can be terrified by things that would never even occur to us. And so, you know, it's just a good reminder to be sensitive and to pay attention to how your kids are interacting with media. And if there's anxiety being produced by something, you know, we really need to engage with that.
Yeah, no, Adam, that's actually beautifully said. We've got five kids at home, and I find myself, unfortunately, sometimes making the decision that because I'm excited about a movie, I want my kids to be excited about it.
Yeah.
And then we end up watching stuff that, you know, we should probably wait at least until they're 12, 13, 14, as opposed to maybe 8 or 9, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Well, let's get into some of the movies that are coming out that are buzzing around a little bit. Obviously, Ant-Man and Wasp. Here we go.
Buzzing around. I see what you did there.
Yeah, was, you know, I just I didn't even catch it. Logan is like doing wings in the studio right
Shame
now.
Shame on you, Peter.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. So Ant-Man and Wasp, there's a bit of we're conversation about this right now, Adam, going on. And I don't know anything about the Wasp superhero. Is this Wasp new to the Marvel Universe at this point?
Oh, no. Ant-Man and Wasp are longtime Avengers. They go back a long ways. I'm an Avengers fan from way, way back, mid-70s on, and these are two characters, two core characters. And so as we've seen throughout the Marvel Universe, Marvel and Disney have excelled in taking these sort of really almost secondary characters and turning them into a thing. You know, who would have thought that Black Panther, who was an interesting but admittedly secondary character to the likes of Captain America or Iron Man or Hulk or Thor, you know, would become this cultural phenomena. And Ant-Man and Wasp is a follow-up to the first Ant-Man movie 2 years ago, I believe. And, you know, it doesn't have the gravitas that Black Panther does. They're different kinds of movies. But Marvel continues to take these characters and really spin them into pretty engaging, really entertaining and fun stories.
Should I have seen maybe the most recent Avengers edition of the Infinity Wars? Would that be helpful in seeing now Ant-Man and Wasp? Or should I have seen just the first Ant-Man movie? What's the best way to approach these movies? Because there's so many, right? I can't keep up with you.
This is like the 19th or 20th Marvel Cinematic Universe movie in the last 10 years or so. And it's helpful. You know, if you want to get your full fanboy nerddom on, it's always good to have the full chronology in place. But to be honest, I hadn't seen the first Ant-Man movie, and that's not a prerequisite here. And as for the movie itself, Ant-Man, if you've seen the trailers, he and Wasp both wear these suits that allow them to shrink. And in Ant-Man's case, he can get bigger, too. And the story turns around. The creator of the suit is a guy named Dr. Henry Pym, and his wife has disappeared somewhere in this tiny realm called the Quantum Realm, and they need Ant-Man's help to go figure out if perhaps she's still alive. And of course, whenever you have high-tech stuff like these snazzy suits, there's always other bad guys that are interested in that technology. So several different characters show up there. So I think more so than maybe we've seen recently, this is almost as much a comedy as it is an action-adventure movie. It's a really funny movie. There are lots of laugh-out-loud moments. And I'm thankful to say most of them don't rely on nasty gags to go for the laugh. But I think content-wise, this one gets a PG-13 for language as much as anything. It just has enough that you definitely want to check out our review before you take the kids to see it. There were a number of points, especially when God and Jesus' names are misused about a dozen times. I'm like, ugh, you know, do you really have to go there? But obviously they've chosen to do that. I think that's the biggest, as our reviewer said, wasp in the ointment here.
Yeah.
As far as content that parents need to be aware of with this film.
So does it at least give us the ability to set up some conversations with our kids about, so why don't we use the Lord's name in vain, and why is it inappropriate, and how we understand that? Can you have those kind of conversations post-movie with the kids?
Oh, yeah, I think so, absolutely. I think anytime that we encounter something in a film, whether we knew it was coming or not, it's great afterwards to engage actively. You know, so often we just think about vegging out. We think about our sort of right to just go and check out and not think critically and passively absorb things. But as parents, the more that we can model active engagement and actively talking about content and worldview, what that demonstrates to our kids is that we really are thinking about what we're watching. So, yeah, I think there's always the opportunity to explore things more deeply with our kids with problematic content and whatever we see.
Yeah, it's so important, right, to have a competing voice. It's hard to have a voice as a parent these days, I find, because there's so many voices in our kids' lives. So to take those opportunities to, as you said, not just take it back passively with a big bucket of popcorn and some Diet Coke, but to really engage on some levels so that you learn your kids learn your voice as a parent as a trusted voice in these things, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. And also to just say, hey, what did you think about that? You know, instead of just saying, so often I think as Christians, it's easy to say, oh, we don't watch this because of X, or, oh, that's bad. And we just sort of, we make these overarching moral statements about something, but we don't really engage with the why. And I think to the extent that we can engage with the why, it demonstrates to our kids that there's a reason here. And maybe our kids won't like the reason. It's not that they're always going to be in lockstep. But we're demonstrating to them this isn't just some random, arbitrary, mom and dad hate everything, but, you know, here's the reason for that. And to the extent as they get older, especially as they're in their late tweens and teens, that we can begin to engage them. How did you respond to this? How did this make you feel? Was there anything that made you uncomfortable here? Then we're putting it on them to, you know, sort of begin to evaluate how what they're watching influences them as well.
That's great stuff, Adam. My wife often reminds me, and when I'm subject to those big sweeping moral statements, that hang on, these are actually human beings in our house, and they're having a journey. And so to engage them with respect, regardless of the age, really matters at the end of the day. Great stuff, Adam. It's 17 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk a bit about Uncle Drew, as well as the disturbing story of Kermit Gosnell, the abortion doctor. And at what level should we engage with that conversation as well with our kids? It's Faith Radio Mornings. We'll be back in just a minute. It's 19 minutes past the hour. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner. And Logan, as we're talking with Adam Holtz on the line here about these different movies and how to walk through them, you need to point something out to me, don't you? You need to sort of chastise me a little bit about a little bit of a mistake I made there.
Peter, it is Infinity War, not Infinity Wars.
Oh.
I can't believe how much of a casual fan you must be if you didn't know that.
Adam, you know, is there any hope at this point?
There's a sequel coming, so, you know.
Yeah, that's true. See,
anybody could have made.
Yeah, Adam, thank you for your graciousness in that. Maybe I was just sort of, you know, thinking towards the future about what was possible in the story. But, you know, I'll get the hang of it eventually. Let's get into Uncle Drew a little bit. I mean, this is a movie about a streetball legend in Harlem, Uncle Drew. And yep. There's, of course, a number of NBA past and present players that show up in this movie. I don't know a ton about it. Walk us through this movie and maybe what we can expect as parents with our kids.
Well, I mean, the whole setup here is a bunch of old guys schooling the youngsters, and there is the main character is a guy named Dax Winslow, who is a young guy, and he desperately wants to win the 50th annual Rucker Classic, which is a street ball tournament in Harlem that's been going on for 50 years. And, you know, if you rewind the clock 50 years to 1968, Uncle Drew and his four other friends, Lights, Boots, Big Fella, and Preacher, were the stars of the court until Uncle Drew just disappeared the night before the championship game in 1968. And so we fast forward to 2018. Dax is trying to put together a team, but his star player, a big guy named Casper, defects to the enemy squad, and he has to put a new team together. And so he, you know, goes out sort of scouting, I guess you would say, across the city and manages to find Uncle Drew, who says, I'll play, but I got to have my team. And so they go on a road trip. They find the other four guys and come back. And I won't spoil it. Well, yes, I will. This is the kind of movie where these teams always win, right?
Sure, of course.
you know, it's just sort of the ridiculous joy of the 75-year-olds coming on the court with a lot of makeup and prosthetics. Uncle Drew is played by Kyrie Irving, and we get Shaquille O'Neal and Chris Webber and Reggie Miller. And this was kind of a surprising movie to me. I expected a totally throwaway movie. I mean, you watch the trailer and you're like, all right, if you're not an NBA fan, what's the point here? But there were some surprisingly deep messages, I thought, about family, about forgiveness, about taking risks and not letting the mistakes we've made from the past cripple us. Turns out Uncle Drew has harbored this kind of awful secret for 50 years, and he's had a conflict with one of the other guys for 50 years that they've never gotten over, and it's about reconciliation. And I guess in terms of the content, it's sort of glass half full, glass half empty. Movies like this sometimes have, you know, nasty jokes just packed to the gills, right?
Yeah, yep.
And there are a few, and it's not without some of those gags and some allusions to the guys' promiscuity in their younger days. There wasn't as much as I was expecting. So, you know, it's a PG-13 movie, but as PG-13 films go these days, I didn't think they pushed things as far as a lot of films did. So I guess relative to everything that was out that's out there these days, I was kind of pleased that it was dialed down a bit. But there's still enough here that you probably don't want to pack the kids in the van and head off to the theater without checking out our full review at PluggedIn.com.
Yeah, that's so helpful. You have written something fully about this, because that was one of my fears that you just mentioned, that this was sort of this, you know, inappropriate sexual slapstick kind of movie that's just rife with it. But it sounds like there's actually maybe some redeeming qualities to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's enough redemptive stuff that I don't think you should just completely write it off, but again, enough stuff that you want to do your homework before you go to this one.
That's great. Well, one more to get into is the case of Kermit Gosnell, the abortion doctor who was convicted of murdering three infants after they were born. And this is such a troubling story on just about every level.
Yeah.
Talk us through what's happening here, where it's being shown, and how we can process this.
Well, there's a movie coming out this October, and depending on which source you look at, it's going to be released in between 750 and 1,000 theaters, and it's called Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. And when I first started to see the information on this, my question was, is this a documentary or is this actually a dramatic movie? Because there was a documentary a couple of years ago, and I thought, well, maybe this one, sometimes these things linger a long time. But this is a dramatic recreation of what has happened in this really deeply, deeply disturbing story. And Dean Cain, to whom some people may remember as playing Superman a long, long, long time ago, plays the lead detective who pursued the case. And Gosnell was eventually convicted of three counts of murder for infants that he partially aborted before killing, and the involuntary manslaughter of one of his adult patients, and is serving a life sentence. But there's the suggestion that he did this hundreds of times. And so I think it's one of those movies that feels like it's culturally important because it pulls back the veil on abortion in some cases being even more horrific perhaps than we know that it is. I mean, that these were babies that were born live that he killed. But obviously, that's the kind of subject matter that, for many of us, we may not need to see a movie dramatizing that to know this is a horrific thing. And so I think it's important that we get a story that's like this out there for people to know about it, but this certainly isn't going to be a movie for everyone to run off and see, that's for sure.
Adam, we've got just about a minute left, but when I think of this movie being created, I think back to just a few years ago when the Netflix series on the OJ trials came out. Is this what this movie's trying to do, sort of recreate that dramatic idea that captured America's attention?
Yeah, you know, I think this is obviously a dramatization of a case that certainly was high profile. I don't think this case was as high profile as the OJ case was. It lacks the sort of superstar gone incredibly wrong feel to it that made the OJ case so riveting. But, you don't have to look far on TV these days to see that we're sort of in love or infatuated with this idea of dramatizing true crime. And so this is of a piece, I think, thematically with this bigger trend that we're seeing. And I guess time will tell whether moviegoers and Christian moviegoers are really interested in engaging with this sobering but yet really gruesome story on the big screen.
It's great stuff, Adam. We so love having you on to just talk through just what's happening in these movies. Give us a little preview at places like PluggedIn.com and then just ways we can talk with our kids about it. Appreciate your presence on the show.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Peter, and hope you have a great Friday and great weekend.
Yeah, you too. It's 27 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a break for Breakpoint and the news and come back for the second half with Chris Martin, Millennial Evangelical. I know Logan can't wait for this conversation. Stay with us here on Faith Radio Mornings. Just got a text from a friend of mine, Logan, said that Ant-Man is awesome. The movie is great. I think it's probably time for me to take my kids to this weekend. Are you going to go see this movie?
You know, Paul Rudd, he's a quirky guy. Evangeline Lilly, she was in Lost. I loved her in that. And I wasn't a huge fan of the first one, but it certainly wasn't bad. Yeah, if I've got some free time.
Sounds great. We'll take a break for the news and we'll come back with Chris Martin, the Millennial Evangelical. Some great comments about how millennials seem to be interested in spiritual things, even if it doesn't mean religious things, and he'll talk us through some of those differences. Stay with us here on Faith Radio Mornings. It is Jed Medefin, the president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans, talking with us this morning about how we as believers can come around caring for orphans.
When churches embrace this together, it's a discipleship journey. It draws people in the church into a deeper understanding of the Father heart of God and closer as a community as they support each other through the joys and challenges of the adoption journey, the foster journey, supporting each other in that walk. And so I couldn't encourage pastors more in that regard. And I would say, you know, as a first step course, I would invite people to the Christian Alliance for Orphans website, kfo.org. We've got lots of resources, videos, materials. I would also encourage that they join us at the National Summit. It's called CAFO 2015 this year, and it's in Nashville at the end of April and the 1st of May. There'll be people from pretty much every state, 30-plus countries as well, all coming together there to really explore how do we effectively serve as foster parents, as adoptive parents, building church-based supports for these families, as well as others who are engaging overseas, all coming together to learn to do that well. And, of course, just celebrating these things together, too, and great music and some of your favorite bands and all of that. But it's ultimately about the church reflecting God's heart in visible action.
That's Jed Medefin and talking about caring for orphans. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com. Such an important topic. There's such evidence of our faith that we're taking care of the people in need around us. So head there for that. We'll take a short break. And when we come back, again, I know Logan is so pumped that Millennial Evangelical Christian. We have Chris Martin coming on to talk about some of the realities of your life, Logan, as a millennial. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Think about the latest conversation you've had with your kids. What did you talk about? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If the average mom and dad were to catalog the conversations they had with their teen, it would be surprising how the talks are both infrequent and of little substance. I know, you're probably thinking, but Mark, I can't get two words out of my kid. I'm doing the best I can. I know you are, and I'm glad you're making an effort. How about setting aside a regular time each week to talk about the deeper issues of life? There doesn't have to be any talk about chores or grades or cleaning up his room. Just ask open-ended questions. You might be surprised how much the frequency and quality of your conversation improves.
Mark Gregston is devoted to helping parents of struggling teens. Find his small group curricula online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
That is not the Chris Martin of Coldplay. It's the better Chris Martin that comes on every couple of weeks here on Faith Radio Mornings and joins us. You're the author of the blog Millennial Evangelical. You can find it at millennialevangelical.com. And Chris, I love how you just approach these issues. It's so informative for me. I know we love having you on to just talk about the millennial generation and how we can begin to close some of these gaps that we just don't need to have between us. So thanks for coming on every other week here on the program.
Thanks, man. It's really good to be here again.
So one of the topics we wanted to get into today that we previewed was the idea that millennials are often seen as fleeing the church, that they don't want to be part of a religious institution per se, but that doesn't make them uninterested or disinterested in spiritual things. And so what are you seeing? Is there a disconnect between religious institutional life and the spiritual life among the millennial generation?
Yes, for sure. Obviously, this is a growing trend across America in general. I think all of us would agree that we see a sort of growing secularization among America widely, not just among millennials. I think there are a number of reasons for that. There are a lot of missiologists and sociologists who could explain that better than I could. One I used to work for, Ed Stetzer, could explain that really well. I think a lot of it has to do with the internet, the growing interchange of ideas and people being exposed to ideas and perspectives maybe they've never heard before. So I think that's part of it. But millennials, we're seeing this among millennials particularly in a more frequent capacity than we see among older generations. Just a few years ago, Pew did a study on religious landscape in America, and they polled people based on their faith. What religious or Christian group do you align with? And among older and younger millennials, they break it out. They basically separate millennials into two separate categories, older and younger, but they're both pretty similar. Older and younger millennials, about 35% of them identify as unaffiliated with any Christian belief system. And it's not like 20% of those millennials are Muslim or Buddhist or something like that. The vast majority of them are atheist or agnostic. In fact, about the same number, 35%, identify as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular. And so millennials aren't identifying as a particular religious group, Christian or not, at a much higher rate than other generations. Gen Xers, who are just a little bit older than millennials, only 23% of them identify as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular. 17% of boomers identify the same way. So nearly double, basically exactly double the number of millennials identify as nuns, not the Catholic kind, or agnostic than boomers do. And so part of this, you know, some people say, well, people become more religious as they get older. You know, people as they become as they realize they're not invincible, they become a little bit more acquainted with death and their fragility. They're more likely to embrace faith. And that's definitely, you know, I think we do see that. I think that's true. I think that's a phenomenon we're all familiar with. But we're not seeing millennials even as they get older now. You know, millennials aren't in your youth group anymore. Millennials are at least in your college ministry. Most of them are starting families, or at least deep into their professional lives at this point. And we don't see an adoption of religion gaining traction. But what we do see, what's kind of encouraging, is that millennials do engage with the spiritual. So a significant portion of millennials, about 50% of millennials, have a deep sense of wonder about the universe, which could be a sort of physical feeling, right? Like, oh man, the universe, it's so naturalistic, it's so, you know, cosmic, I guess. But at the same time, I think there is sort of a spiritual tint to that, a sort of deep sense of wonder. I think the wonder goes just beyond, I wonder how big the universe is. And then at the same time, they have a deep sense of spiritual peace and well-being, about 50%. Which is fascinating. 50% of millennials have a deep sense of spiritual peace and well-being, but only 34% of them, 35%, identify as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular. So a lot of them feel spiritual peace and well-being, at least half, but few of them seem to be finding that in faith. And that might be discouraging to pastors, church leaders, parents, whomever are trying to reach millennials with the gospel. That might be discouraging because there's a higher percentage of nuns among millennials than anyone else. But I think we should be encouraged by that spiritual peace and well-being and the deep sense of wonder number, where if you're ministering to a millennial, you're trying to reach a young person with the gospel, whether it be a child or someone who's come to your church once or is your neighbor, you should be encouraged that about 50% of them are interested in – they're thinking about their spiritual peace and well-being on a regular basis. I think that presents a huge opportunity for us in reaching millennials with the gospel who may not already subscribe to a religious faith or at least take that label, even if maybe they believe the same things.
We're talking with Chris Martin, and it's so helpful to just – I think it can be this disturbing sense that just because a millennial doesn't say maybe I'm a Baptist or I'm an evangelical free or I'm a covenant church, that they're not identifying with a given denominational label, that they're uninterested or disinterested in the spiritual realm. And so we can figure out ways to connect us together as we're following Jesus together. Chris, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'd love to talk talk about what it means to be involved in the Twitter sphere and just that it's not a terribly healthy environment so often. I would love your thoughts to help us walk through being part of the social media scene. We'll take a short break and come back and talk more with Chris Martin, Millennial Evangelical. About 12 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we're talking with Chris Martin, MillennialEvangelical.com. Not easy to say, Logan, MillennialEvangelical.com, but it's a great site. I highly recommend it. Chris writes some outstanding stuff that can help people like me at 47 years old, you know, even understand this Twitter sphere stuff. Because, Logan, you're coming with a little bit of a quiz this morning, and I really do need to learn. I don't understand the language of this jungle, so take it away here, Logan.
Well, Chris, you wrote a great article on what it means to be involved in the Twitter sphere, especially with how many young evangelicals are on it, but not necessarily the older generations. They seem to be shying away from it. And in this article, you used a few words that I wanted to check to see if Peter knew what they meant. There's a lot of lingo here, so play along at home. Peter, do you know what it means for someone to be woke?
My morning coffee does that for me, Logan. Am I missing something here?
Well, the idea there is that you are more understanding of the world than you once were.
Okay, all right.
You get it. You know, the third eye is open, as they would say.
Okay, so I'm 0-1. What, you got another one for
me? All right. I think you'll get this one. You're a basketball guy. What does it mean to dunk on someone?
Well, I mean, you throw the ball down through the hoop right on top of him and kind of posterize him is the only language I know. But help me out here, Logan.
Chris, can you help him out on this
please.
One?
I am flailing away, Chris. Help me out here.
Well, it's the same principle applies. It's just a metaphor that people use on social media, but Twitter specifically, where you shame someone into submission. Like, you know, in basketball, when you have someone dunk on someone else. Like the Greek Freak, as you might know from the Bucks.
I do.
When he dunks on someone else, they just need to be quiet. He just puts them to shame. It's not even the conversation is over. Any trash talk that was going on is over. In social media language, when you're trying to shame someone or you're in a debate and you just end it with a knockout punch, that's what we call dunking on someone.
Oh, see, this is so helpful. I'm feeling more relevant as each second goes by in this conversation. But, you know, kidding aside, you mentioned this idea about dunking on somebody. It kind of is this sort of free-for-all Wild West in Twitter sphere, right? And even evangelicals are engaging on what tends to be not terribly helpful conversations. This isn't a great forum for good debate on different topics. From what you're saying in your article, what I understand.
Yeah, look, I work in social media every day. I mean, it's a significant part of my job. A big part of my job is helping churches engage in social media better. But the more I use social media, the less I'm interested in using it personally beyond pointing people to things I've written or things like that, because I see so much negativity in the broader Twitter sphere. You know, I don't follow everyone, obviously, but I keep track of a number of, I guess, subcultures on Twitter just to see what the conversation, even if they're people I disagree with or wouldn't align with, but they're people who I just want to see how they're thinking and what their worldview is and how that's playing itself out in the sociological experiment that is social media. And so I keep an eye on all these groups and I see that a lot of people have been noticing just a heightened negativity and critical spirit even within their own subcultures on Twitter. It's hard to say Twitter is more negative, well, because it's so huge. But even various subcultures that are very different from one another are all kind of acknowledging, hey, this is getting really negative. This is getting unhelpful, critical. And I'm seeing that in the evangelical Twitter sphere. It's really bothersome to me. I see so many evangelicals who are knowledgeable, good writers, people whom I've read or have gone to see speak places or things like that, that are just taking someone's tweet, they're quote tweeting it, which, Peter, means you tweet it, you retweet it, but you're able to put your comment in front of it so that people can see what you think about it. And so I see them, the most common form of dunking on someone on Twitter is instead of replying to someone and saying, hey, I disagree with you for this reason, in which case only the two of you and the people who follow both of you would see that conversation. Instead of doing that, evangelicals are doing this. They're quote tweeting and then responding with some snarky comment in the comment section so that they can show – they're dunking on them, right? They're showing this person's idea is silly. Here's why I think I'm right. Mm. And I've just seen so much of that. And I think there's a pretty common root cause of it. And we can talk about that if you want. But I think it's just bothersome to me that evangelicals are getting more critical while the rest of the world is getting more critical. And my hope would be that we could become a little bit more positive and encouraging.
Yeah, I think that's so helpful, Chris. And I would love to get into what your perceptions are of the root cause of that, because as you've said, I mean, this forum sort of lends itself to our worst impulses, it feels like, where we do just try to shut each other down and dunk on each other, as you would say. And yet, as Christians, we're called to something different, right, in terms of encouragement and hopefulness and some forbearing spirit. I mean, when is the last time you've seen forbearing spirit play itself out on Twitter?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think the root cause of it, regardless of whether you like him or loathe him, is the presidency of Donald Trump. President Donald Trump, again, whether you like him or loathe him, you have to admit that he's changed the way discourse happens, public discourse happens in general. He's a little bit more crass than past presidents. Again, whether you, this is apolitical, I'm just observing. And so I think the woke evangelical, this is where we're getting into our terms. I'm glad we defined these at the beginning, Logan. Thank you. Woke evangelicals who are kind of bucking against the general trend of evangelicalism, really don't like Donald Trump. And these woke evangelicals are the ones who are most active on Twitter. The common pew-sitting, church-attending evangelical is not on Twitter. It's more your thinkers, your authors, your speakers, etc., that are engaging with one another. They don't like Donald Trump, and I think they are allowing his conduct and their distaste of his conduct to change the way they talk to each other and change the way they talk to people who agree with him. And I think it's making us – I think evangelicals who don't like Donald Trump feel as though they have the permission to have conversations in ways they wouldn't otherwise, because they think the situation is so dire, they're able to bring out less – Christ-like means of communication. And I just don't think that's right. And I think we need to check ourselves. I'm not exempt from this. I have committed this crime myself. So it's not like I'm just pointing fingers, but I've seen so much of it and I've been quiet about it for so long. I just thought I needed to finally just kind of call out what I and other people are seeing. I've had a few text messages since then that are like, hey man, thanks for calling this out, because I've kind of seen it too, but I didn't really want to say anything about it. And so I kind of decided to just say what I thought.
Well, I love it, Chris. It's a great article, and it's on millennialevangelical.com. But we have just 1 minute left here, Chris. But I do want to speak to the importance of having the conversations, especially with people from different generations, but not in this sense, because we only grow when we're challenged. But how can we engage with others online in a way that is growing and is evangelical and the way that we should act as Christians?
And is Twitter even a possible environment for that?
I think it can. I think it can be a place to start. The most productive debates or conversations with people with whom I disagree on social media have always started in the public space, because that's how we connect, right? Like, we follow each other on Twitter or something like that, and maybe we tweet back and forth once or twice. But then I say, hey, can we take this to direct messages or email or text message? Because then we're not showboating. Then we're not playing to acquire or trying to get people to approve of how we respond. Then conversation becomes a whole lot more civil if you know no one else is watching, which is really sad. But when you know people are watching your conversation, you try to showboat and make people think you're cooler than you actually are or smarter than you actually are. But when the conversation gets private and personal, you have less of a temptation to do that, because there's no one to impress. And so I always encourage people, sure, have public conversation, but as soon as you can, make it private. So neither one of you are tempted to try to impress people that you want to impress.
Chris, that is great stuff. Everybody, I recommend going to millennialevangelical.com. It's a great article that you wrote. Chris, thanks for walking us through the Twitter sphere this morning. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, it was great to talk to you guys.
Take a short break and wrap up our show. Logan Paul just stepped into the studio here, too, part of my generation. Give us one more Twitter word that we need to understand here.
All right. How about lit? What does it mean when something is lit, Paul?
Something's on fire.
I mean, this is pretty easy, Logan. I don't know. You could
What's
come up with
word?
Something better.
Well, you're getting there. You're one step away. When something's on fire, it's great. Like, this is on fire. So when something's lit, it's exciting. It's great.
Whatever.
It's cool.
It's great stuff, Logan. Hey, everybody.
That's
thanks.
Called cool in our day.
Yeah, it's cool in our day. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I hope you have a great Sabbath weekend ahead, and looking forward to catching you on Monday morning. Remember, the tomb is empty.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.